Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Judgment on Janus by Andre Norton, narrated by Gabriel Vaughn. 1. The Stuff of Dreams. Here, even the sun was cold. Its light hurt the eyes as it glittered on the square, sullen blocks of the Dipple. Niall Renfro leaned his forehead against the chill surface of the window, trying not to think. Not to remember, to beat down those frightening waves of rage and frustration that brought a choking sensation into his throat these past few days, a stone heaviness to his chest. This was the Dipple on the planet of Korwar, the last refuge, or rather prison, for the planetless flotsam of a space war. Forced from their homeworlds by battle plans, none of them had had a voice in framing. They had been herded here years ago. Then, when that war was over, they discovered there was no return. The homes they could remember were gone, either blasted into uninhabitable cinders through direct action, or signed away at conference tables so that other settlers now had sole rights there. The Dipple was a place to rot, another kind of death for those planted arbitrarily within its walls. A whole generation of spiritless children was growing up in it, to which this was the only known way of life. But for those who could remember. Niall closed his eyes. Limited space, curved walls, the endless throb of vibrating engines driving a free trader along uncharted roads of space, exciting glimpses of strange worlds, weird creatures, new peoples, some alien of mind and body, some resembling the small boy who lurked in the background, drinking in avidly all the wonders of a trade meeting. These he could remember. Then confusion, fear, which formed a cold lump in a small stomach, a sour taste in throat and mouth, lying in the cramped berth space of an escape boat with warm arms about him, the shock of the thrust away from the ship that had always been his home, the period of drift while a mechanical signal broadcast their plight, the coming of the cruiser to pick them up as the only survivors. Afterwards, the Dipple. For years and years and years, always the Dipple. But there had been hope that the war would end soon, that when he was big enough, old enough, strong enough, he could sign on a free trader. Or that they would somehow find credit deposits owed to Duan Renfro and buy passage back to Mahisha. Wild dreams both those hopes had been. The dull, dusty years had wasted them, shown them to be flimsy shadows. There was only the Dipple, and that would go on forever. From it there was no escape, or, if there was for him, not for her, now. Niall wanted to cover his ears as well as close his eyes. He could shut out the grayness of the Dipple. He could not shut out now that weary little plaint, half-croon, half-moan, sounding monotonously from the bed against the far wall. He swung away from the window and came to stand at the side of the bed, forcing himself to look at the woman who lay there. She was nothing but a frail wraith of skin and bones, not Malani. Niall wanted to beat his fists against the gray wall, to cry out his hurt and rage, yes, and fear, as might a small child. It was choking him. If he could only gather her up, run away from this place of unending harsh light, cold grayness. It had killed Malani, as much as Duan Renfro's death. The ugliness and the hopelessness of the Dipple had withered her. But instead of giving way to the storm within him, Niall knelt beside the bed, caught those restless, ever-weaving hands in his own, bringing their chill flesh against his thin cheeks. Malani. He called her name softly, hoping against all hope that this time she would respond, know him. Or was it far more kind not to draw her back? Draw her back. Niall sucked in his breath. There was a way for Malani to escape. If he were just sure. Overwhelmingly sure that no other road existed. Gently he put down her hands, pulled the covering up about her shoulders. Once sure, he nodded sharply, though Milani could not see that gesture of sudden decision. Then he went swiftly to the door. 3 strides down the corridor, and he was rapping on another door.
Oh, it's you, boy.
The impatient frown on the woman's broad face smoothed.
She's worse?
I don't know. She won't eat, and the medico... The woman's lips shaped a word she did not say.
He said she ain't got a chance.
Yes.
For once, he's right. She don't want any chance. You gotta face that, boy.
What else had he been doing for the past weeks? Niall's hands were fists against his sides as he fought down a hot response to that roughly kind truth.
Yes, he returned flatly. I want to know. How soon?
The woman swept back a loose lock of hair. Her eyes grew suddenly bright and hard, locking fast to his in an unasked question. Her tongue showed between her lips, moistened them.
All right.
She closed the door of her own quarters, firmly behind her.
All right.
She repeated as if assuring herself in some way. But when she stood beside Milani, she was concerned, her hands careful, even tender. Then she once more drew up the covers, looked to Niall.
2 days, maybe a little more. If you do it, where's the credits coming from?
I'll get them.
She wouldn't want it that way, boy.
She'll have it. He caught up his overtunic.
You'll stay until I come back?
The woman nodded.
Stowar is the best. He deals fair, never cuts.
I know. Niall's impatience made that answer almost explosive. He hurried down the corridor, the 4 flights of stairs out into the open. It was close to midday. There were few here. Those who had been lucky enough to find casual labor for the day were long since gone. The others were in the communal dining hall for the noon meal. But there were still those who had business in certain rooms, furtive business. Korwar was, except for the Dipple, a pleasure planet. Its native population lived by serving the great and the wealthy of 50 solar systems. And in addition to the usual luxuries and pleasures, there were the fashionable vices, forbidden joys fed by smuggled and outlawed merchandise. A man could, if he were able to raise the necessary credits, buy into the Thieves' Guild and become a member of one of those supply lines. But there were also a fringe of small dealers who grabbed at the crumbs the thieves' captains did not bother to touch. They lived dangerously, and they were recruited from the hopelessly reckless, from the Dipple dregs, such as Stowar. What he sold were pleasures of a kind. Pleasure, or a way of easy dying for a beaten and helpless woman. Niall faced the pale boy lounging beside a certain doorway, met squarely the narrow eyes in that rat-like face. He said only a name.
Stowar.
Business boot?
Business.
The boy jerked a thumb over his shoulders, rapped twice on the door.
Take it, boot.
Niall pushed open the door. He felt like coughing. The smoke of a hebel stick was thick and cloying. There were 4 men sitting on cushions about a brass table playing Star and Comet, the click of their counters broken now and then by a grunt of dissatisfaction as some player failed to complete his star.
What is it?
Stowar's head lifted perhaps 2 inches. He glanced at Niall, acknowledging his presence with that demand.
Go on, say something, we're all mates here.
One of the players giggled. The other 2 made no sign they heard, their attention glued to the table.
You have halluce. How much?
Niall came to the point at once.
How much do you want?
Niall had made his calculation on the way over. If Maradisa could be relied upon, 1 pack. No, better 2 to be safe.
2 packs.
2 packs, 200 credits, Stowar returned. Stuff's uncut. I give full measure.
Niall nodded. Stowar was honest in his fashion, and you paid for that honesty. 200 credits. Well, he hardly expected to have it for less.
The stuff was smuggled, of course, brought in from off-world by some crewman who wanted to pick up extra funds and was willing to run the risk of port inspection.
I'll have it, in an hour.
Stowar nodded.
You do that, and the stuff's yours. My deal, Graham.
Niall breathed deeply in the open, driving the stink from his lungs. There was no use going back to their own room, turning over their miserable collection of belongings to raise 20 credits, let alone 200. He had long ago sold everything worthwhile to bring in the specialist from the upper city. No, there was only one thing left worth 200 credits. Himself. He began to walk, his pace increasing as he went, as if he must do this swiftly before his courage failed. He was trotting when he reached that other building, set so conveniently and threateningly near the main gate of the Dipple, the off-planet labor recruiting station. There were still worlds, plenty of them, where cheap labor was human labor, not imported machines which required expert maintenance and for which parts had to be imported at ruinous shipping rates. And such places as the Dipple were forcing beds for that labor. A man or woman could sign up, receive settlement pay, be shipped out in frozen sleep, and then work for freedom. In 5 years, 10, 20. On the surface, that was a way of escape out of the rot of the Dipple. Only, frozen sleep was chancy. There were those who never awoke on those other worlds, and what awaited those who did was also chancy. Arctic worlds, tropical worlds, worlds where men toiled under the lash of nature run wild. To sign was a gamble in which no one but the agency ever won. Niall came to the selector, closed his eyes for a long moment, and then opened them. When he put his hand to that lever, pulled it down, he would take a step from which there would be no returning, ever. An hour later, he was once more at Stowar's. The Star and Comet game had broken up. He found the smuggler alone, and he was glad that was so as he put down the credit slip.
250, Stowar read.
From beneath the table, he brought a small package.
2 here, and you get 50 credits back. Signed up for off-world?
Yes.
Niall scooped up the packet, the other credit slip.
You could have done different,
Stowar observed. Niall shook his head.
No? Maybe you're right at that. There are 2 kinds. All right, you got what you wanted, and it's all prime.
Niall's pace was almost a run as he ran back to the home barracks. He hurried up the stairs, down the corridor. Maradisa looked up as he breathlessly entered.
The medico was here again. Director sent him.
What did he say?
The same. 2 days, maybe 3.
Niall dropped down on the stool by the table. He had believed Mara earlier. This confirmation should not have made that much difference. Now he unrolled the package from Stowar. 2 small metal tubes. They were worth it. Worth selling himself into slavery on an unknown world. Worth everything that might come to him in the future, because of what they held for the dying woman who was his mother. Halluce, the powder contained in one of those tubes, was given in a cup of hot water. Then Melanie Renfro would not lie here in the Dipple. She would be reliving for a precious space of time the happiest day of her life, and if the thin thread that held her to this world had not broken by the time she roused from that sleep, there was the second draft, to be sure. She had had to live in terror, defeat, and pain. She would die in happiness. He looked up to meet Mara's gaze.
I'll give her this.
He touched the nearest tube.
If there is need, you'll do the other? You won't be here?
That was the worst, to go and not to know, not to be sure. He tried to answer, and it came out of him in a choked cry. Then he mastered himself to say slowly,
I ship out tonight. They've given me 2 hours. You'll swear to me that you'll be with her? See,
he unrolled the slip for 50 credits.
This, take this and swear it. Niall.
There was a spark of heat in her eyes.
All right, boy, I'll swear it. Though we don't have much to do with any of the old gods or spirits here, do we? I'll swear, though you need not ask that. And I'll take this, too, because of Wace. Wace, he's got to get out of here. Not by your road, either.
Her hands tightened convulsively on the credit slip. Niall could almost feel the fierce determination radiating from her. Wace Disa would be free of the Dipple if his mother could fight for him.
Where did you sign for?
She asked as she went to heat the water container. Some world called Janus, he answered. Not that it mattered. It would be a harsh frontier planet, very far removed from the Dipple or Korwar, and he did not want to think of the future.
Janus, Mara repeated. Never heard of that one. Listen, boy, you ain't ate anything this morning. I got some patter cakes, made 'em for Wace. He must have got labor today. He ain't come back. Let me...
No, I'm shipping out, remember? Niall managed a shadow smile.
Listen, Mara, you see to things afterwards, won't you?
He looked about the room, nothing to be taken with him. You didn't carry baggage in a freeze cabin. Again he paused to master his voice.
Anything here you can use, it's yours. Not much left, except...
He went directly to the box where they had kept their papers, their few valuables. His mother's name bracelets and the girdle Duan had traded for on Sargol were long since gone. Niall sorted through the papers quickly. Those claim sheets they had never been able to use. Might as well destroy them, their identity disks.
These go to the director afterwards, but there's this.
Niall balanced in his hand Duan Renfro's master's ring.
Sell it and see. She has flowers. She loves flowers, trees, the growing things. I'll do it, boy.
Somehow he was certain Mara would. The water was steaming now. Niall measured a portion into a cup, added the powder from the tube. Together they lifted Milani's head, coaxed her to swallow. Niall again nestled one of the wasted hands against his cheek, but his eyes were for the faint curve of smile on those blue lips. A tinge of happiness spread like a gossamer veil over the jutting of the cheekbones, the sharp angles of chin and jaw. No more moaning, just now and then a whisper of a word or a name. Some he knew, some were strange, out of a past he had not shared. Milani was a girl again, back on her home world of shallow seas, beaded with rings and circles of islands, where tall trees rustled in the soft breeze that always came in late spring. Willingly, she had traded that for life on a ship, following Duan Renfro out into the reaches of space, marrying a man who had called no world but a ship home.
Be happy.
Niall put down her hand. He had given her all he had left to give, this last retracing, past care, sorrow, and the unforgivable present, into her treasured past.
You there, you Niall Renfro?
The man in the doorway wore the badged tunic of the labor agency, a stunner swung well to the fore at his belt. He was a typical hustler, one of the guards prepared to see the catch on board the waiting transport.
I'm coming.
Niall gently adjusted the blanket, got to his feet. He had to go fast, not looking back, never looking back now. But he halted to rap on Mara's door.
I'm going,
he told her. You will watch?
I'll watch, and I'll do all the rest, just like you'd want it. Good luck, boy.
But it was plain that she thought that last a wasted wish. Niall walked for the last time down the hall, trying to make his mind a blank, or at least hold to the thought that Milani was out of the Dipple in another way, a far better way. The guard gathered up two more charges and delivered them all at the processing section of the port. Niall submitted without question to the procedure that would turn him from a living, breathing man into a helpless piece of cargo, valuable enough once it was delivered intact and revived. But what he carried with him into the sleep of the frozen was the memory of that shadowy smile he had seen on his mother's face. How long that voyage lasted, what path it took among the stars, and for what purpose, Niall was never to know, or really care. Janus must be a frontier world, or else human labor would not be necessary there. But that was the sum total of his knowledge concerning it, and he was not awake to see the huge dark green ball grow on the pilot's vision plate, develop wide continents and narrow seas. The land choked with the dense green of forests, vast virgin forests that more civilized planets had long since forgotten existed. The spaceport on which the cargo vessel landed was a stretch of bare rockland, scarred and darkened by the years of fiery lashing from arriving and departing ships, and extending irregularly from the center were the clearings made by the settlers. Garths had been hacked out of the forest, bare spots in the dark green. The green carried a hint of gray, as if some of the wide leaves of those giant trees had been powdered with a film of silver. Men cleared fields, setting disciplined rows of their own plants crisscrossing those holdings, with the logs of the forest hollowed, split, and otherwise forced into serving as shelters for the men who had downed them. This was a war between man and tree, with here a runner of vine, there a thrust of bush, or a sprout of sapling tonguing out to threaten a painfully cleared space. Always the forest waited, and so did that which was within the forest. The men who fought that battle were grim, silent, as iron-tough as the trees, and stubborn as space-scoured metal. Their war had begun 100 years earlier, when the first survey scout had marked Janus for human settlement. An earlier attempt to conquer the world for man had failed. Then these off-worlders had come and stayed. But still the forest had been cleared only a little, a very little. Settlers were moving portward from the scattered garths, gathering at the town they hated, but which they had to endure as their link off-world. These were hard men, bound together by a stern, joyless, religious belief and unshakable self-confidence. These were men who labored steadily through the daylight hours, who mistrusted beauty and ease as part of deadly sin, who forced themselves and their children, their labor slaves, into a dull pattern of work and worship. Such came now to buy fresh labor in order to fight the forest and all it held. 2. Fringe of Forest.
"This is the lot, Garthmaster. Why should I hold back my wares?"
The cargo master of the space freighter balanced lightly, his fists resting on his hips, a contemptuous light in his eyes. Beside the would-be customer, he was wire-slim and boyish in appearance.
"For forest biting, for field work, you bring such as these?"
His contempt was as great, but divided between the spaceman and his wares.
"Men who still have something to bargain with do not sign on as labor, as you well know, Garthmaster. That we bring here any at all is something to marvel at."
The settler himself was quite different from the miserable company he now fronted. In an age when most males of Terran descent, no matter how remote from the home planet that strain might be, eradicated facial and body hair at its first appearance, this hulking giant was a reversion to primitive times. A fan of dense black beard sprayed across his barrel chest, masking his face well up on the cheekbones. More hair matted the backs of his wide hands. As for the rest of him, he was gray. His coarse fabric clothing, his hide boots, the cap pulled down over more bushy hair. His basic speech was guttural, with new intonations, and he walked heavily, as if to crush down some invisible resistance. Tall, massive, he resembled one of the trees against which he and all his kind had turned their sullen hatred, while the men before him seemed pygmies of a weaker species. There were 10 of those, still shaken by the process of revival, and none of them had ever been the Garthmaster's match physically. Men without hope, as the cargo master had pointed out, were labor signers, and by the time they had reached that bottom in any port, they were almost finished already, both physically and mentally. The settler glowered at each, his eyes seeming to strip the unfortunate they rested upon in turn, measuring every defect of each underfed body.
"I am Kalu Kosberg, from the Fringe. I have 40 vistas to clear before the first snow, and these are what you offer me. To get an hour's full labor out of any would be a gift from the sky."
He made a sign in the air.
"To ask a load of bark for such, it is a sin."
The cargo master's expression was serious.
"A sin, Garth Master? Do you wish to accuse me of such before a speaker? Here? Now? If so, I shall bring forward my proof. So many credits paid for sign-on fees, cost of transportation, freeze fees. I think you will find the price well within allowed bounds. Do you still say sin, Garth Master Kosberg?"
Kosberg shrugged.
"A manner of speaking only. No, I make no charge. I do not doubt that you could bring your proof if I did, but a man must have hands to help him clear, even if they are these puny crawlers. I will take this one, and this, and this."
His finger indicated three in the labor line.
"Also, you."
For the first time, he spoke directly to one of the laborers on view.
"Yes, you. Third man from the end. What age have you?"
Niall Renfro realized that demand was barked in his direction. His head was still light, his stomach upset by the concoction they had poured into him. He struggled to make a sensible answer.
"I don't know."
"You don't know?" Kosberg echoed. "What sort of an empty head is this one, that he does not even know how many years he has? I have heard much foolishness spoken here by off-worlders, but this is above all."
"He speaks the truth. According to the records, Garth Master, he was space-born. Planet years do not govern such."
Kosberg's beard rippled as he chewed his words before spitting them out.
"Space-born. So. Well, he looks young enough to learn how to work with his hands. Him I will take also. These are all full-time men."
The cargo master grinned.
"For such a run, to Janus, would we waste space on less? You have the bark ready for loading, Garth Master?"
"I have the bark. We shall put it in the loading area. To be on the road quickly, that is necessary when one travels to the Fringe. You, before me, march! There is unloading to be done, though by the looks of you, not much will pass by your muscles this day."
The spaceport of Janus was a cluster of prefabs about the scorched apron of the landing field, having the strangely temporary look of a rootless place, ugly with the sterile starkness of the dipple. Urged by a continuous rumble of orders, the laborers hurried to a line of carts. Their cargoes, unwieldy bundles of silvery bark, were being transferred by hand to growing stacks carefully inspected by a ship's tallyman.
"This goes there."
Kosberg's simple instructions were made with waves of his hand indicating certain carts and the bark piles. Niall looked up at the man standing in the nearest wagon, balancing a roll of bark to hand down. He was a younger edition of Kosberg. There was no mistaking they were father and son. The beard sprouting on his square thrust of chin was still silky, and the lips visible above it pouted. Like his father, he was dressed in heavy, ill-fitting gray clothing. In fact, all the men working along that line of rapidly emptying wagons presented a uniformity of drabness that was like some army or service garb. But Niall had little chance to note that, for the bundle of bark slid toward him, and he had just time to catch it. The stuff was lighter than it looked, though the size of the roll made it awkward to manage. He got it to the stack safely in spite of the unsteadiness of his feet. Three such journeys brought him back to an empty cart, and he stood still with a chance to look about him. Two heavy-shouldered, snorting beasts were harnessed to each of the wagons. Broad, flat hind feet and haunches were out of proportion to their slim front legs, which ended in paws not unlike his own hands. They sat back on those haunches while, with the hand paws, they industriously scratched in the hairy fur on their bellies. In color, they were a slaty blue with manes of black.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?